In case you're confused, I'm not Robert Darnton. Though he was introduced first in a properly alphabetical order. My name is first on the program, and for that reason, I am going to start. But I want to start by first thanking Lauren Clay and Katie Crawford. We all know from doing some version of this, perhaps ourselves, that it's one thing to have sponsors who provide dollars, and it's another thing to have help who help put up things. But when I got here earlier, I saw Lauren out there looking for the ways of showing where the room was herself. And we all know that it's a staggering amount of work and a huge amount of worry, which I hope will soon be over, about how it's all going to turn out. So I really want to thank both of them. I also want to say, of course, that I am incredibly honored and thrilled to be part of this group to talk about Roger Chartier, whom I have known for many, many, many years, more than we now any longer want to tell in public. In an interview last year with the French journal Société et Représentation, Roger Chartier basically refused to answer the interviewer's opening question about his own intellectual itinerary, saying, quote, "The past bores me sometimes, and the biographical fallacy undercuts any possible response to such a question," unquote. Instead, he preferred to begin with a discussion of the attacks against the notion of representation, by which he meant criticisms, in part by social historians, of cultural historians' reliance on the analysis of representations. I will return to these attacks, but only after making a foray into the past, however fallaciously, to talk about Roger's contribution, in the first place, to the focus of cultural historians on representation. I am going to refer to him as Roger, because I come from California, and because we consider that appropriate, perhaps less appropriate in the context of the Society for French Historical Studies, but so be it. My main point is that the question of representation is crucial if one wants to understand Roger's influence on the historical profession over the last 3 or 4 decades. Although Roger began publishing in book history as early as 1969, when I was still in my cradle, and participated in some Annales-style serial social history studies early in his career, he came to international attention in the 1970s and 1980s with a critique of the then axiomatic view that cultural representation simply reflected their social underpinnings. From the beginning, even while criticizing current views, he saw social and cultural history as not necessarily incompatible. In a 1970 review of Geneviève Bollem's pioneering work on popular almanacs, her book was significantly subtitled An Essay in Social History, he complained at the same time that the work was insufficiently statistical, but at the same time, he also made reference to representation in a new way. He began by citing a remark of Lucien Febvre's, quote, "History is entirely social by definition," unquote. "L'histoire est tout entièrement sociale par définition." If we had more time, it would be interesting to unpack this statement of Lucien Febvre's, but we do not have time. But, he continued, Bollem's study, I'm quoting him now, hopes to illustrate this remark insofar as the social is no longer exclusively equated with socioeconomic analysis and where the men of the 17th and 18th century are grasped through the representations of the world, daily life, and history that are presented to them by this virtually ageless book, The Almanac, unquote. Already in 1970, then, the sight lines of his point of view were established. To grasp the social meaning of people's lives, it is essential to get at the way print purveys representations of the world and thereby itself shapes social meaning rather than mirroring that pre-existing meaning. Was it the content or the form or the practices of reading that configured meaning? These questions would animate much of Roger's work afterward. But I am going to leave those aspects to my fellow panelists. I am going to stick with the problem of representation itself. I do not pretend to offer the intellectual itinerary that Roger himself refuses, but I will cite two articles from the 1980s that had great resonance, one from 1982 and one from 1989. In a much-cited essay, well, it's at least much-cited by me, in a 1982 collection edited by Stephen Kaplan and Dominic LaCapra, Roger argued explicitly against the reduction of mental structures to their material determinations. I quote him, "The representations of the social world themselves are the constituents of social reality," unquote. In the 1989 article in Annales, significantly titled The World as Representation, Le Monde comme Représentation, he made clearer his own particular version of this representational turn. "The first step," he wrote, and I'm quoting, "is to abandon the narrowly sociographic conception according to which cultural differences necessarily reflect some previously constructed set of social categories," unquote. "There is no hard and fast distinction," he maintained, "between objective social structures and subjective representations of them. What he called classificatory and perceptual systems become themselves social institutions that incorporate social divisions in the form of collective representations." But now, he also went on to say, what should be done instead? Study the struggles between and over representations. I quote again, "By working on struggles of representations in which the stakes are ultimately the organization and therefore the hierarchization of the social structure itself, cultural history may be able to free itself from an overly strict dependence on the kind of social history that is devoted exclusively to the study of economic conflicts," unquote. This program is, I think, and I will return to this in a while, a combination of Bourdieu, Foucault, and de Certeau, but I don't have time to unpack that right now. This move to study conflicts over representations led Roger back to texts, but now to texts understood differently. Printed materials and other cultural objects circulated within certain social zones, but these social zones had to be determined through investigation, not assumed a priori, because such objects could be appropriated in different ways, appropriation being a favorite word of Pierre Bourdieu. The practices of reading and material supports of texts had to be studied in order to understand these social zones. Political power entered into these relations, but not political power as conceived, for instance, by François Furet, whom Roger probably had in mind, I am speculating, when he argued against giving priority to, quote, "the freedom of the subject, the availability of ideas, and the deliberate components of action," unquote. Roger advocated something other than an intellectual or political history in the usual sense, an approach more along the lines of the analysis of court society laid out by Norbert Elias, or Foucault's study of discourse. While it might be tempting to jump to the conclusion that Roger participated, therefore, wholeheartedly in the linguistic or cultural turn since he was one of the originators of them, he only participated à sa façon, in his own distinctive fashion. Although I have not done a quantitative study of his works, it seems to me that he is much more likely to cite Pierre Bourdieu than Jacques Derrida. And though Roland Barthes appears here and there, his presence is overshadowed by references to Paul Ricoeur or to Louis Marin. Roger's intense engagement with Elias and Foucault can be seen very clearly in the essays collected in On the Edge of the Cliff, 1997. That book, you see, I've already done the 70s and the 80s, and now we're in the 90s, even the late 90s. That book also signals his unwillingness to sever cultural from social history, a point taken up at some length in a penetrating review by Jonathan DeWald, who also points to a tension in the essays between discourse and practice. I know these are big words for late in the afternoon, but this is the way it is. Chartier associates discourse, DeWald maintains, with authority and power, while associating practice with freedom, creativity, and popular resistance. Roger claims to see a similar tension between discourse and practice in Foucault as well as de Certeau, but DeWald contests that reading of Foucault. These distinctions, or the absence of them, matter because they point to a larger problem in distinguishing the realm of the cultural from the realm of the social. If we grant that the primacy of society and derivative character of culture can no longer be accepted, then just what is their relationship? This has been at the heart of debates for the last decades. Roger does not want to argue that everything is culture. He insists instead that each domain, society and culture, has its own characteristic logic or logics. That may be, but they seem very much intertwined. In Edge of the Cliff, he argues that the concept of representation makes it possible to designate and connect three areas of reality. I'm quoting. First, the collective representations that embody within individuals the divisions of the social world and that organize the schemes of perception and appreciation by which individuals classify, judge, and act. Second, the forms in which social identity or political power is exhibited, as seen in signs and such symbolic performances as images and rites. Third, I'm quoting, I want this to be clear, the presentification within a representative, individual or collective, concrete or abstract, of an identity of a power, a process that endows that identity or power with continuity and stability, end quote. Now, to me, number one seems to make collective representations the products of the divisions of the social world. Number two makes cultural forms the symbolic expression of social identity or political power. And number three seems to imply that the representations of power or social identity are crucial to the continuity and stability of that power or social identity. But that still seems to make the representations themselves rather dependent on power or social identities. So it seems that culture is crucial to the operation of the social world, but still very much a product of that operation. Not derivative, exactly, because having a logic of its own. But it is not entirely clear to me where the logic of culture derives, as it were, its logic. If we turn back now to the recent interview in Société et Représentation, we can see that these concerns are still very much present. Now we've jumped from the late 90s to 2015. What were the three criticisms of the notion of representation that Roger had in mind? First, the accusation that the study of representations inadvertently distances the historian from the facts on the ground because that study inevitably makes the historian the accomplice or victim of the illusions, reconstructions, or desires of the historical actors. In short, the notion of representation obscures the truth. Second, that the study of representations is caught up in the smoke and mirrors of perceptions and is too far removed from the objective reality of structures and practices. In short, the notion of representation obscures reality. Third, the aporia of the notion of representation itself, which is both a presentation of something absent, the re in representation, and a presentation of something present, the presentation in representation, and is thus an inherently self-contradictory notion. Chartier's response, Roger's response, not to criticisms raised by his interviewers, I would remind you, but that he raised himself, often made reference back to his main inspirations, Foucault, Bourdieu, Elias, and de Certeau. From Foucault, he takes the idea that representations are themselves as real as anything else in the social world. Moreover, most of the documents used by historians are themselves representations, and therefore the conditions that frame those representations must always be taken into account. From Bourdieu, he takes the idea that while representations depend in some ways on the positions and trajectories of the actors, they also construct the social world itself through systems of classification or distinction. From Elias, he takes the idea that the early modern period saw the repression of violence between individuals and groups, which opened the terrain to representations, iconography, eulogies, histories, medals, portraits, and the like, becoming instead the chief instruments and objects of conflict. From de Certeau, he took the notion of edge of the cliff, referring to the difficulty posed by the attempt to study practice as something outside of discourse, but only approachable through the study of discourse. Staying on the edge of the cliff means rejecting both the idea that texts, written documents, or discourse give complete access to practices, and the notion that there is nothing outside the text. It means living with the recognition of the irreducibility of practice to discourse. It also means, Roger concludes, that though getting at an absolute truth in history might be impossible, historical knowledge still is possible and necessary. I do not believe that Roger has resolved the issue of how culture and society relate, but then no one else has either. And it may very well be that any answer must be empirical rather than theoretical. Actually, I believe he could say that the logic of culture is in practices, though for me that would mean more attention to embodiment, gesture, and nonverbal forms of knowledge. For him, I think the practices of reading have been very primary in this regard. But I think he will probably say this in his response. He does have an answer to this question. No one has done more to put the question on the agenda for us all. And for that, I, and I believe I speak more for more than just myself, will continue to be profoundly grateful to him. Thank you.